Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Full Sail Podcast. We are so excited to have you sailing with us today. On today's podcast, as always, we have co-host David Deep, and special guest for today's episode, we have Fred Katz of Clipperblog, Bleacher Report, and probably 50 other websites that I can't think of off the top of my head right now.
You're 52, actually.
All right. How are you guys doing?
I'm wonderful.
I'm doing better than the Clippers, that's for sure.
Oh, man. Things have been quite tumultuous, and to say that they've been treading water would be an understatement at this point. 3-2, and honestly, not looking that great in any of the games. They've had four games where they've given up leads of 10 or more, and they got absolutely spanked in Golden State. The way things are looking right now, I would say that, you know, it's time to grab the lifeboats. The ship is sinking. We need to panic. All hands on deck. Doc, I know he's a great captain, but I think he's going down with this ship. Whether we like it or not, it's time to panic, isn't it, guys? I mean, really, it's doomsday. It is the end of Clipper Nation, isn't it?
Season's over. Call it off now. 3-79. It's an inevitability.
According to some people on Twitter, yes, it already is over.
And it has been rough. The good thing about five games is it's five games. It's a very small sample size. There are definitely things to not like and to criticize about the season so far. And among those, I would say the defense looks like the most egregious. Now, how do you go from being the ninth defense last year in the NBA to whatever it is that we're watching on the court right now, Fred?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really know the answer. I can only tell you what I've seen, and it's that they're just not as disciplined as they were last year. When you see a team come together for the first time, like you see like a team like Cleveland, and they don't understand each other's tendencies, it makes sense because they haven't played together. And defense is really mostly about communication and knowing your teammates' tendencies so you can help and recover for them. With the Clippers, it's basically the same guys, so it's weird. But you look at it, and some guys have different tendencies than they had last year. Like DeAndre the other night just tried to jump two or three passing lanes. Pretty much every time he jumps a passing lane, there ends up either being a wide open shot or an open layup because there is no one. Blake's late to recover, and they're just their defense gets thrown off, and they're messed up with the help and stuff like that, which we didn't see last year. Their pick and roll coverage is slower. I know Doc ripped them for basically being sluggish last night, is the nicest way to put it, or not last night, I guess. Last night at the time of this recording, but I don't know what the actual reason is, but they're playing differently than they did last year.
Do you think any of it has to do with transition and coaching staff? I know that there is a lot of finger pointing towards the new coaching staff and how they are just not as good a staff as last year and Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry is probably the person that gets named the most, but in terms of everyone else, Tyronn Lue, Kevin Eastman's up in the front office now. It's a whole new, you know, it's a whole new assistant coaching group for the most part. And a lot of the names on there, they're not box office material, I would say.
Yeah, you know, it's always, you're always treading in murky waters when you start talking about assistant coaching staffs, because when from the outside, it's hard to tell. In terms of Gentry, I mean, I think you can see the fingerprints of Alvin Gentry's offense in Golden State. And you can see a lot of the stuff, even though the Clippers are running a lot of similar plays this year. In terms of just fluidity of the offense, it's not there as much. It's more reliant on Blake mid-range, more reliant on a few more ISOs, short pick and roll on the left side. That kind of stuff is different. On the defensive side, I'm not sure. It's possible that it has to do with coaches. It's possible that it's just a bad stretch and that they're all kind of out of it at the start of the season. I don't know. I think unless someone comes out and blatantly tells us what it is, it's hard for us to figure out on the outside exactly what it is, but that's certainly a possibility, I would say.
Dave, do you think that there is a chance that the way the team has gone from last season to this season, that there's so much happening that really they've kind of set sail on this new voyage with Steve Ballmer, and that there was so much drama that they had to overcome, and everyone's looking at this as such a new day, new horizon, that everything is fresh, and they kind of have this restart, you could say, with the new ownership and all of that, that there's maybe less focus on just the basketball, because they feel like, oh, okay, we're the favorites now, we've got the new ownership, we're darlings. It's almost like the switch is turned off.
Maybe. I don't really know what they're thinking, but I do know that there were a lot of distractions in the playoffs last year and in throughout most of the offseason. And I do think that did have a part in Doc's inability to nab free agents and make some trades, because, you know, there was a lot of guys rumored to be in the mix, and it seemed like he struck out on a few of them. You know, he was able to get Haas and Farmar, but I feel like if there was no distractions, if the new ownership was already in place, or that Sterling thing never happened, this team would, coming into the season, would actually be in better shape. I think getting someone like a Paul Pierce or another small forward would have been a greater possibility. And so in that case, I think the roster outlook would have been, would have been in better shape. But coming into the season, I mean, you know, they had the ownership took over in mid, Ballmer took over in what, mid-August. So they had a full training camp, you know, with everybody. And so I wouldn't think that with a full training camp, you know, full preseason, that they would be struggling this much. You know, and plus, you know, the core came back. All they had, they added a few new guys, but the core guys, the top, you know, six guys came back. So, I mean, it did play a part in it, but I don't think it played a big part that was huge enough to, you know, predict this kind of sluggish play to begin the season.
And I mean, there's really not a lot of positives to say about the start of the season, but at the same time, and you alluded to this on a Clipper Blog Live episode a couple games ago, Fred, is that if they were having this sort of stretch in the middle of the season, most likely this goes unnoticed. And with having this at the beginning of the season, the anticipation of a new season, that there's basketball back, and that this is our first impression of this team for the new season, it's almost like we're preordained in our minds to think that the way they're playing now is indicative of how the entire season is going to go, not really putting enough credence in the fact that it is an 82-game season and that there is a lot of time. There are many months ahead of basketball to fix the issues that they have now.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. I think we have a tendency to overreact. I mean, look, people have the Cavs losing 60 games now, and Memphis Memphis and Houston are the two best teams in the West. And, you know, if Houston goes on a 5-game winning streak in the middle of February, no one's shocked by this. But now all of a sudden Houston is, you know, the best team in the West. I think we have a tendency to overreact when the records tell us to do so. And eventually things tend to even out, as an educated person would expect, or, you know, a person who follows it would expect it to. So, I mean, I think the Clippers are going to be fine. I do think there's reason to worry about championship potential with the way that the Wings have defended, because I think it's possible they just get burned by Wings and they lose earlier than maybe I thought they would at the start of the playoffs. But I mean, I'm not worried about them, you know, falling out of the playoff picture or anything along those lines.
No, I definitely have them in the playoffs still. And I would say that the Wings situation, that's something to keep an eye on, but it's not as if there haven't been efforts. In fact, there was some talk earlier today, and it was mentioned on one of the local stations here, the Clippers broadcast station, the Beast 980, that there were some rumblings from the Clippers that Doc was looking for a small forward right now. Dave, you had mentioned that you saw Jordan Hamilton got waived earlier, and you kind of had your eyes on him.
Yeah, Jordan Hamilton is a guy, you know, I think I heard somewhere that he's one guy that they might be looking to pick up. He's not the answer you know, as far as, you know, being a starter to replace Barnes, but he can come in and help. I know that Doc's, you know, he's been looking for a small forward for quite some time. And you know, whether it was signing Joel Ingles, you know, or, you know, CDR, he's been looking, and I want to believe he's still looking, because if something comes up where, you know, he feels it's beneficial to the team, I think he'll take a hard look at it. The problem is, I don't know what the Clippers have to offer, because, you know, they've used up their assets. You know, they don't have the first rounder this year. And then 2017 was used in the Dudley trade. So pretty much you got Wilcox, Bullock, and Barnes' expiring contract, basically, or, you know, JJ or Jamal. And if you're going to trade JJ or Jamal for a small forward, I mean, it's got to be an upgrade. I mean, if you're going to do it for, you know, another guy that can start, but you're losing Jamal off the bench, it's more of a lateral movement. So he's got to weigh his options and make sure that it's the right move.
I know a lot of people are always criticizing Jamal for dribbling too much, for dominating the ball, but he is a valued asset, and I feel that to replace him is a lot easier said than done, and that because we're so used to his tendencies, and we probably don't appreciate what he provides to the team because we see it on a daily basis, and we only focus on the negatives, as most people do these days, because it is so easy to focus on the negative, that we wouldn't know the effects of losing a Jamal Crawford on this team until it actually happened. Now, in terms of the small forward situation, going from a small sample size to a smaller sample size, Reggie Bullock has looked pretty solid camping for threes past couple games. I'm starting to hear some rumblings of maybe a team start Reggie Bullock forming. What do you think of that, Dave? Do you think that maybe it's time to just give the second-year player a chance, give him the starting spot?
So, I mean, you know, Bullock can shoot. We all know that's what he does. He's a 3-and-D guy. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. And I think if he keeps it up, I think he deserves the spot, because right now Barnes can't shoot. He's, you know, he's just struggling really badly. And if he's unable to shoot, and, you know, with him being 34 and up there in age, he's just not as mobile as he used to be. The strength is cutting to the basket, but which he did exhibit at the end of the Utah game, but, you know, he continues to shoot those shots and he's not making them. He's not much of a use out there. And I think Bullock, you know, is a younger guy, fresher guy, you know, a little bit more athletic. So I think if he keeps doing it, keeps shooting the lights out, then, you know, he deserves a shot.
Fred, do you think it's time to raise the anchor on Matt Barnes as starting small forward? Do you think that Reggie Bullock is someone that deserves the opportunity to start at that position, or maybe even CDR?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about pulling Barnes. I wouldn't do it yet. I think if you look at Barnes is a historically really streaky player. Even last year, on January 10th, he was shooting 34% from the field and 25% from three. After January 10th, 47% from the field, 37% from three. He had that ridiculous March where he took off, and that was on 5 threes a game after January 10th. I think it's hard to tell in 5 games if this is Barnes getting a little older and becoming a less effective player, or if it's just Barnes getting off to another slow start, which is something that he's shown a tendency to do in his career. The thing with Bullock is that he's a good shooter when he's open, but he doesn't really move off the ball. You lose that element to the offense if you start him. And against a defense like Utah, which is way better than it gets credit for, but still not incredibly disciplined, he can get open in the corner because he kind of hangs around the corner and defenses collapse in on Paul, or they collapse in on Griffin when they're in the paint, and shots open up when Blake passes out of the post and he swings around, or Paul kicks out, or whatever it may be, and he ends up getting open looks. But against Golden State, he only got one shot in 12 minutes, and that wasn't a coincidence because it was a good defense, which focuses on taking away the corners and does it very effectively. That might be the best defense in the West. And so against defenses like that, Bullock is just never going to get shots. And because of that, you're basically going to play 4-on-5. Against teams like that, I think there's a good chance that Barnes is actually more effective, even if he's not hitting shots. So I would stick with Barnes, hope that maybe he picks it up like he did last year and just use Bullock off the bench sporadically as a shooter. If Barnes continues to struggle, then yeah, I think it makes sense. But I think it's a little too early to jump the gun in making the switch right now.
Honestly, in terms of lineup data and and just team plus minus, I feel like even though Matt Barnes doesn't contribute the most in the scoring column, that there are just certain little things and tendencies that he has on the floor when he's on the offensive end that really help the overall offensive contribution in terms of where he positions himself on the court. Defensively, yeah, that's really where the most concern is. But if we're talking about Bullock or Barnes, probably aren't contributing the most defensively one way or the other. Maybe we're just overreacting on Barnes, and like you said, we just have to wait for his streak to kick in. Speaking of offense, though, I mean, the offense, it's been weird. We see a lot of Blake Griffin where he's just shooting mid-range shot after mid-range shot, and it's not even like he wants to get those shots in the flow of the offense. He's standing out there. He's camping there. And the easy comparison, in a lot of people's minds, is that because Mike Woodson's there, he's playing him like he's Carmelo, and he's just parking him out in spaces on the mid-range and just allowing him to shoot jump shot after jump shot. But it's a low-percentage shot, and he's not as good of a jump shooter even with the improvement. So what is going on with the offense, Fred?
Yeah. I mean, I made that. I know Jovan made that comparison in the Woodson comparison in Clipper Blog Live. I made it in an article, and a little hypocritical of me because I did say earlier it's hard to know exactly what's coming from which assistants and what's coming from the players. But, yeah, it does look, as Jovan described it, a little bit nixy. I think what happens is Blake's jumper is almost kind of addition by subtraction. It's way better. It's incomparably better. He's a legitimately above average mid-range jump shooter, to the point that he should be taking threes. It's incredibly frustrating when he takes a 22.5-foot shot with his heel on the line as opposed to just taking it from 23.9. He can make that shot. We've seen him make that shot when he's open and he spots up, and it would only expand the game and help space the floor and help the Clippers. They're reliant on the mid-range shot right now. They're reliant on Blake posting up. And Blake is not getting to the line as much, especially in first halves. You look at the numbers, he's still getting the line 7 times a game. But you look at his numbers in first halves, it's often him coming out, him straying away, being very, very, very jump shot heavy in first halves. And I don't know if Doc talks to him at halftime and always reminds him, remember, go inside, that's where you're best. And he ends up getting to the line in the second half. He only had one free throw attempt in the first half the other night against Golden State. And that was also with a one rebound game. He had a no free throw attempt game against someone. I forget which game it was earlier last week. And that was also in a first half. So I think it has a lot to do with Blake's aggressiveness, his inability to get into the post now, the lack of high pick and roll they're running. They're running a lot more short pick and roll. They're not doing a lot of high pick and roll with short rolls. It's a little different. I would love to see them run more high pick and roll. I think that's kind of their bread and butter. I think it's one of the most unstoppable plays in the league, and it'd be nice to see them get back to that. I think they will. I think these are early season jitters, and they're very, very fixable flaws, but they're flaws for now nonetheless.
It is I say it all the time. It's an 82 game season, and we're focused so much on just the first 5 games, and I'm a huge proponent, I'm a big supporter of big sets of data and having as large a sample size as possible. And considering that the team has been together for 3 seasons, even with this this 5-game stretch, as bad as it looks, it just seems so counterintuitive to go against all we've known for 3 years and focus on just these 5 games. So I'm not worried, and I think in the long run, probably not a lot to worry about. It's just really a matter of when that switch turns on, when they really start making the run. But again, like I said, long season. Dave, do you think they struggle to find their footing, or do you think it's just probably going to correct itself shortly?
Yeah, I think eventually it'll even out. You know, like I think I was saying on Twitter, the 2012-13 season, they had a stretch early in the season where they were 8-2, and they lost 4 in a row. And I remember people were panicking, like, oh my God, what's going on? And then they reeled off 17 in a row after that. So I think that's, you know, an example of something happened early in the season and people going crazy and then riding the ship. So I think they can do that. So we'll have to wait and see, but it might be it might be best if eventually, you know, depending on who runs the offense, if it's Woodson, maybe Doc sees that and, you know, takes the reins and says, hey, you know, let's use the same offensive principles from last year and you know, get back to playing how we usually play. So we'll have to see. But I think as the season goes, the team will get better. I mean, there's just no way a team with this much talent can just struggle so much for so long. I think right now they're trying to find their way. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like there's not a lot to worry about. We're definitely in panic mode right now, but with undue reason, I feel, because we've talked about it. What we want to see is we want something in our minds that just validates our belief that this team is dominant, that they are going to win it all, just like so many people have predicted so early in the season.
Yeah, I don't even think that this season should be, I mean, the outlook shouldn't be for them to win it all. I think getting to the conference finals is a huge step, because this team still has flaws. And for people to think like, oh my God, they're going to win 65 games, go all the way to the finals and take it all. You know what? I think it's a little bit premature, because they still need to take that next step. You know, they haven't gotten past the second round. And with everything I was saying earlier about the offseason, you know, it could have gone better for them. And I think, actually, if you're looking forward to next season, this following offseason will be the defining offseason, because they'll have more resources. It'll be Ballmer's first offseason as the owner. And so I think looking to next offseason will be the point where they can actually take that next step. So conference finals is a huge step, and I think that if they can get there, that in my opinion, it's a success.
Yeah, and speaking of the offseason, especially this past one, we talked so much about the deficiencies on the wings, and when we look at this past offseason, it was actually one of the weakest we've had in a while in terms of trying to pick up a free agent small forward. It was either you give a lot of money to someone that's probably on the older side, or you were kind of taking a gamble in a lot of ways on talent that wasn't the most established. Fred, do you think that, like Dave was saying, that maybe it's just time for people to dial it back a couple knots, and that this team, while it's great to have a lot of people think they could make it all the way to the finals and even win it all, that they kind of have to learn to crawl before they can walk?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think if it makes sense at all, I think both perspectives are right if you think of it in a rational sense. I would not be surprised if the Clippers went to the finals. They're talented enough that Blake Griffin and Chris Paul could throw them on their backs and they could overshadow the flaws, and those two guys can pair up to just have monster series against anyone and beat anyone in the league. I definitely believe that. But I also completely agree with Dave that this team is flawed enough that failing to get to the finals should by no means be a disappointment, and it should not be against expectation. There are enough flaws on the roster that we shouldn't look at it and think like, all right, this is certainly the best team in the league. I think if we learned anything the first week and a half of the season, it's probably that.
All right. I think that's all the questions I have, but I'd like to move into something that we haven't done on the show before. I know that as an early watcher of a lot of Clipper Blog Live, that Fred, you guys played a lot of games. So I've got a game that I'd like to call Conspiracy Theory.
Okay.
Where I'm going to give you my theory, and you guys have to try and debunk it. Okay?
Oh, this is good. Right. This is good. We stopped playing right. games on Clipperblog Live. I think, honestly, I think I totally forgot that we played games, and that's why we stopped doing it.
All right. Okay, Fred, I'll start with you. Conspiracy theory number one. The reason that J.J. Redick is a bad shooter is because he's a new dad and babies cry a lot and they take away from your sleep.
Okay, I will debunk it. If J.J. Redick still has enough time to make his hair look that good, then he has enough time to be awake in the morning and be able to shoot.
All right. Okay, Dave. What we saw from DJ last year was a complete and total fluke, and he's always going to be that first year confused-looking center that we saw when he first joined the Clippers.
I will debunk that. I mean, come on. DJ is basically – he had a breakout year last year. you know, Doc has instilled a lot of confidence in him, and you know, he's improved. He's improved in quite a few areas. You know, he still can improve more, but to say that he's going to become rookie year DJ or, you know, second year DJ, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, the dude led the league in rebounding, his third in block shots. And this year, you know, he's still averaging, you know, in the mid-30s in minutes. So as the year goes along, I mean, a lot of nights, he's going to be the leading rebounder. He's the guy, you know, when Blake's, you know, camping outside or whatever, DJ's the guy that's going to be cleaning glass. He's the guy that's going to be doing the weak side defense and manning the paint. So I see his numbers being pretty similar to last year.
Fred, Spencer Hawes and Jordan Farmar are terrible additions to the team because they've never won anything playing significant minutes on any team ever.
Well, Hawes is a really nice offensive complement to both DJ and Blake. I know he's got his defensive issues, but he works really well in the pick and pop. And I think once he develops chemistry with Chris Paul, the offense with you can potentially have an unbelievable offensive lineup. It might get torched on defense, but it might be so good offensively that it's still worth running, where you can just go Paul, Redick, Crawford, Blake, and Hawes. And you have shooting like crazy. You can spread the floor. Your five can shoot threes. It's an amazing pick and roll because you've got the best pick and roll point guard. You've got the best pick and roll power forward, and you have a top five pick and roll center just because he's a 40%+ 3-point shooter in terms of just being difficult to guard. Yeah, I mean, if you can play a lineup like that, then I think you have to be excited about the opportunity to do it. I've got a good one. Debunk it. The Clippers can't win without Donald Sterling.
Man.
His absence is the cause for all of this.
Dude, we need Donald. We need DTS back. He is the key.
How about I say I don't debunk it? And I think that having a great owner is actually a terrible thing, because now that you have all these luxuries like great health equipment and supportive staff, that you have to actually think about how great things are instead of just trying to focus on playing the games.
I think we should run with this.
Yes. I think we're done here. Yeah, Fred, thanks for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I had a great time.
All right. So, for our guest Fred Katz, for co-host David Deep, I am Brandon Tomioi, and this was the Full Sail Podcast. We hope you sail with us again.